Chapter 12. Pockets of Evil. The darkness followed them through the tunnel, banished only through the function of the godskins, the Melam, as Geffen called them. Udo led most of the time. He told himself this was out of a desire not to stare at his friend's back, which would soon drive him to boredom. But after a good deal of walking, well, he could only continue for so long through a tunnel with no end in sight before his thoughts drifted to other things. And it was the other things he sought to bar from his mind. He listened to the man who walked behind him, listened to the soft tread of feet picking gently over uneven ground, and nothing more. Geffen had fallen back to silence again. Udo was back to being annoyed.
Three of us, Udo thought. An odd omission.
Geffen knew how it was with the donkey. He was deciding whether he wanted to mention it, or if he even wanted to know the reason, when something in the tunnel changed. Far ahead, so that at first he took it only as a trick of his eyes, they are sick of all this blackness, they're creating something for me to focus upon, he thought. He saw a dim blue glow. He blinked and shook his head, but it refused to leave. Then, in a meager flash of intuition, he held his hand up before his eyes. The glow was hidden. When he lowered his hand, the glow returned.
All is well? Geffen asked.
I see something ahead.
Yes, the ditches, Geffen agreed. Here, let me go ahead. It drops off abruptly at the opening.
Udo pressed himself into the wall while Geffen squeezed by, then resisted the desire to curse spasmodically when presented with the very sight he'd hoped to avoid, the silent back of his friend, surrounded by tunnel walls so uniform they seemed to undulate in the passage of their combined light. Heat, Geffen had said.
He meant that I can see heat somehow.
It sounded like a fine trick, one he had no idea how to control. He thought about that. The way Geffen had spoken, it seemed that Udo's own desire had something to do with how the suit behaved. But he'd learned through experimentation that it was something more fundamental than simple desire. It was subtle. When he stuck himself to the wall and walked at right angles to Geffen, he'd not thought, "I desire my feet to stick to this wall." It had been deeper. He had placed his feet against the rock and expected them to stay there, and so they did. But even then, he suspected that the sentiment was not quite right. It wasn't so much expectation he'd felt. It was belief. He had believed he would be able to walk upon the wall. He'd believed that his palm, the very surface of it, as well as the pads of his fingertips, would stick to the rock as though adhered there with glue. There was a world of difference between desiring a thing and simply doing it, he realized. He might desire to lift his arm, but it would only remain hanging at his side. But if he moved it, if he simply did it, it would certainly go where he wanted.
We are here, Geffen said. Mind your step coming to this ledge.
Udo looked up and saw that his friend was bathed in a soft blue glow. Not that the skin covering him was any more visible. It was not. It seemed to absorb light like cloth absorbed water. The glow ringed the absence of his body in a corona, and Udo realized he could again see the ripples of many colors playing up Geffen's legs when he took each step. Then Geffen disappeared, and Udo stood upon the precipice alone. Below him awaited the valley of hell.
So the path upon which she has sent you has led you.
The voice had come from his left. He looked there and saw Geffen clinging lazily to the rock face with a single hand and foot. He returned his attention to the valley.
They're people, Udo whispered.
Yes, I believe I said as much.
No, but they're people.
Walk with me, Udo. The path is perilous, but manageable if you stay close.
He led them down a crooked trail that switched back upon itself as a rule. If there had ever been a single bit of it that was straight, Udo guessed it must have existed long before he'd come there. Perhaps a pet of the gods, the Watcher, maybe, had dragged the trail crooked at some point in the hopes of making it impassable. But that made no sense. Had that been the goal, they would have been better served wedging a boulder into the tunnel exit. Udo considered asking why the path had been cut in such a miserable fashion, but he'd lately given voice to so many questions that his mouth was simply tired of forming the word why. He held his silence, followed his guide, and tried not to think about the mountains of Erda and Talam, and how much they felt like the place he now walked. The general blue glow of the valley had long since resolved to individual lights. Arranged in concentric circles, they descended down into the pit, which was a funnel. As they approached the outer ring, Udo was able to glean more detail. He understood what the lights truly were. They'd been decanted in black barrels made from some sort of iron. Upon the front of each barrel was fashioned a glass window, as if the occupant was a display piece. Udo approached one of these and looked in. It was a man. His skin was as white as bleached bone, and Udo realized he floated in some sort of liquid suspension. He'd seen similar in Baldovinus's solarium, the curled, skinless body of an eviscerated cat floating in a jar. This one still had his skin, though, unnatural as it was. There was no hair upon his head, face, or chest, and though he could not see it, Udo suspected his regenerative organs would be likewise innocent. He appeared to be anywhere between young adulthood and the fullness of maturity. The lack of hair made it hard to judge. He was entangled in a snare of pale, milky ropes, enwrapping and imprisoning his body. They looked to Udo like strings of maggots stretched to impossible lengths. He drew closer to the glass and peered inside. Looking over the man's form, he saw where the maggots, for so he instantly named them in his heart, buried into the flesh at the chest, the stomach, the throat, the back of each hand. They pulsated as though excreting constantly into their host. Udo looked up into a face of carved marble. Somewhere above the head was a blue light, another of those cold god lights, that bathed the interior of his chamber. When he looked again at the man's face, the eyes were open. Udo recoiled. His feet came loose on the ground in his panic, and he felt himself drifting slowly back. He twisted wildly, stretching with his arms and legs to find a solid anchor, when a hand closed around his ankle. He drew his other leg in to kick at it, but stopped when he heard Geffen say, "Easy, Udo. I've got you. Come back down now." He was tugged gently down. When his feet contacted the rock, he made the Melam grasp it with such ferocity he thought he could have ripped a chunk away from the cavern surface. He bent double, leaned against his knees, and took some time to gather himself. "They move by reflex," Geffen was saying. "Sometimes they even twitch or batter themselves against the glass. There's nothing to fear from them. They cannot harm you. They can't even see you, eyes open or closed." Udo looked to his left, then his right. The line of blue lights stretched away in either direction, disappearing upon themselves and bending back, the ends rejoining on the far side of the field. Beyond the first ring was another, separated by the distance of perhaps one rooten, and beyond that another, and so on, deeper and deeper toward the center of the funnel. "There are thousands of these," Udo whispered.
"Tens of thousands," Geffen agreed.
"Monstrous. Why would they keep them here like this?"
"To learn."
Udo looked at him.
"To learn what?"
Geffen searched out Udo's eyes as if peering through smoke, but said nothing. The latter waited for an answer, but one did not come. He shook his head and turned back to the field. There was another barrel a few paces away. He walked to it, looked inside. This one held a woman who must have died on the downward slope of her life. Her face was lovely, mature. sharp jaw and cheeks, brow serious and predatory, terrible and beautiful. Slowly, his fascinated eyes explored her. Breasts still round, they might have sagged back in Erda, but here they drifted weightless like all else. He put his hand to the glass over her stomach and leaned in closer. There were marks along the sides of the waist where her children had stretched her. She floated in blue and slimed in bindings of filth and was lovely.
The gods have a plan, Udo.
What plan could this possibly serve? He croaked.
Then he felt Geffen's presence immediately behind himself and flinched away. Udo heard him sigh, and a moment later saw Geffen walking deeper into the field through the corner of his vision. Not knowing what else to do, Udo followed.
These people once lived in your world, Geffen said, in Erda. They had given themselves to sin in life. Now in death they have been brought here for observation, not punishment, Udo. They are here for learning.
And what is it they're expected to learn in this state?
Not their learning, the gods. And do keep in mind, this does not represent all your world has to offer. These are only the people who could be spirited away. It is a tricky business bringing a soul to this place. Believe me when I say that Hel has her hands full in her work.
You mean she takes the body? How? How has no one seen this? What happens when the family sets the pyre and has no remains to consign?
Well, being faithful, those without families have a better chance to end here than those who are surrounded with loved ones. But even so, the gods are not without their magics. An empty shell is usually given as an offering to those the departed left behind. It helps them to cope, to move on, if there are remains to dispose of. But even so, these before you now are not the bodies that were taken from Erda.
Udo was distracted from the endless barrel field by the movement of his friend, the right arm lifted so he could tap at his temple with a finger.
Everything you are is in here, Udo. I know it seems there is more to you. You feel sadness or joy at the center of your chest, and so you'd say your heart is glad or sorrowful. You feel fear in your stomach, maybe as deep as your testicles. You hold your hands before your face and say, "These are my hands, these are part of me." But all of those things are only extensions of you. They are projections, tools that you use to interact with the world around you. They are not you.
You mean my soul, Udo muttered.
As you like. Any name will do. Id, ego, identity, experiences, soul. They all mean the same thing. The truest, most secret part of the you that is you. The gods take this part from men, from women, in rare cases even children, and entomb them in these vessels. To be held here, studied and learned from.
They passed between another row of glowing blue barrels. Udo looked back in the direction from which they'd come and discovered he could not see where the field began. All around him was the softly glowing blue light that obscured the surrounding cavern from his vision. When he turned his gaze back to Geffen, he saw that his friend had receded to a small dark blotch far ahead. The only part of him Udo could see clearly were the many colors rippling up his calves each time he took another step. Udo wondered how he had gotten so far behind.
I continue to wonder to this day. I am not certain if his time sense had been tampered with, or if he was simply overwhelmed and not processing sensations in the usual fashion. Either case is a possibility.
He hurried forward to catch Geffen up, bounding lowly over the rock on three limbs, lifting arm and legs to glide, waiting for his body to slip slowly, so slowly, toward the ground, touching down and leaping again. Geffen continued to walk at his normal pace, as if the presence of his subject was a matter out of his hands. Udo had more questions ready when they were together again, but Geffen resumed speaking before he could ask them.
As I said, these people had committed themselves to sin in life.
They've exhibited behaviors too destructive to leave unchecked in a healthy, self-governed society. The gods have tried, in the early, early past, to eliminate such behaviors through selective breeding. In other cases, they have reached into the very building blocks of man and tampered, rearranging certain bits and pieces of your personalities before your vessel was even born. In all cases, such meddling yielded unfavorable results. A certain sense of individuality was lost, which in turn deadened the natural drive for self-preservation. And so you have this place. They bring them here, the anomalous people, the outliers. They bring them here for study in the evil ditches. The dead go on, ignorant of their surroundings, stuck in the same patterns they maintained in life, and are watched. Sometimes they are allowed to continue on freely, while in other instances their caretakers may attempt to break them of their habits.
Caretakers? I see no one else here.
The caretakers are invisible. They are what you would call witties, spirits who share the reality of the dead.
They live with them? Inside their minds?
More or less.
And they try to break people of their habits, Udo stated.
He was convulsed by a shiver. They observe and adjust. They seek to understand the processes or instincts responsible for destructive behavior and see if they can be altered without damaging the human spirit.
Wait, Udo said.
He'd stopped walking. Geffen stopped as well and turned back to face him.
Damage the human spirit? Does that mean a certain amount of destructive behavior is necessary?
Perhaps, Geffen said. He sounded sad to admit it. It is a paradox of humanity. When you are first delivered into the world and all is new and primitive, a certain degree of destructive behavior is required for survival. An attitude that says, us first before them. This attitude comes from the same place that causes people to prefer the satisfaction of their own needs before those of others. It is the basis for your competitive nature, which in turn fuels innovation and is a necessary starting condition to survive a harsh environment. But eventually man does survive. Soon enough, much faster than you might realize, in fact, man grows to hold dominion over his world. He organizes, fashions a society, a collection of strangers, a whole country of them rather than us, all of whom must function together toward the health and betterment of their species. The rules of survival change at this point, yet sadly, man has always proven slow to adapt. And so we have this place, Hell. A domain of learning. It is where the gods strive to understand their own creation and improve upon their work.
What are those people who were not destructive? Udo asked. What happens to the people who don't belong here?
Their material is archived while their spirits are allowed the gift of a permanent death.
He gave Udo a tour of sorts. The digger followed in a stupor, commenting little. Often he directed his attention to the ground, hoping to avoid the endless series of white bodies.
Floaters, his mind insisted, and he shook his head sharply. That's what they had called them in Plotzdorf, the city that straddled the Ruhr.
When some sorry bastard drank himself stupid enough to tumble off the dock, or when some other took a shiv between the ribs after sundark and was tossed in, when they were discovered later, the people there called them floaters. So he thought of these people now, barreled and bound in hell. Despite his best efforts to abort the thought, it insisted on returning. It echoed within him.
Floaters.
Fuck, Udo snarled. Is there something wrong? Geffen asked. He'd been in the middle of recounting the exploits of one particular subject, a paunch-bellied man with heavy facial scarring and only 3 fingers on the left hand.
I need a moment.
Very well.
How long does this go on for?
You saw it from above.
Yes, I know I fucking saw it from above. I don't see any end to it now, though, now that I'm down in it. How many rows are left until we reach the center?
There are three primary circles composed of several rings of souls each. You have thus far penetrated the edge of the first circle. Here, the people who were tormented by their own appetites are housed. This is the circle of lust and gluttony. It is a place of self-harm.
Ah, blessed mother, how far does it go?
Far. Of all sins, this is by far the most common.
Wonderful, Udo scoffed. Even in hell there are commoners.
Geffen nodded.
Yes. However, I think you will find it is better to be a commoner here. The torments are less severe.
He resumed walking. Udo watched him a moment, then followed. He didn't know what else to do. Following Geffen felt like a kind of tacit approval of that place, yet he knew he would be lost without his guide. If he truly wished to escape that forest of floaters, the way was forward. It was forward, and only one of them knew the path. He closed the distance to the man ahead, glancing sidewise at the floaters he passed. He grew tangled in his own thoughts as he followed, phrases playing and repeating in memory, until something Geffen said stood forth boldly.
Torments? He asked.
Yes?
You said these people are not here for punishment.
So I did.
But they are tormented?
Some of them.
Geffen, your horseshit half-answers are giving me a bloody asshole. You know good and goddamned well what I'm getting at. Do I have to spell it out for you?
Geffen reached back, took Udo by the shoulder, and drew him forward.
Come this way. Look, see this person here? Her name was Agnesa. In life, she was a whore, but it was not her profession that brought her to hell. There is nothing inherently wrong with prostitution, you see. She had a certain commodity that others wanted. She was able to trade this for goods or wealth. And taken in isolation, it seems a perfectly reasonable arrangement. See how young she is?
All right.
She had one child, Sophie. Her delivery was difficult. It damaged Agnesa in specific ways so that she could not conceive another child after the first was born. And this is where things grow interesting. She had one child, Udo. She knew she could only have one. The midwife who saved her life told Agnesa as much after examining her. And so her child, Sophie, should have been a motivating force in her life. The child should have spurred Agnesa to fight, to work harder and provide. She should have improved herself, or desired to improve herself at the very least, perhaps save her marks and attain to a safer brothel with better appointments and security, better clientele. If prostitution was unsatisfactory, she should have been motivated to do something else. There were a number of professions socially acceptable for unmarried common women, even those who had children. She always could have lied. She could have claimed her husband had died in Walhaz. No one would have said otherwise had she gone to a new town. There are so many things she could have done for Sophie. So many ways she could have been that girl's mother.
Was it drink?
Udo asked. He gazed at her face. The lack of hair and eyebrows made her look very young indeed. There wasn't a line upon her, not a single wrinkle. He could tell she hadn't borne milk for very long. Her breasts were supple, small. They must have been sore bumps stacked atop that birdcage of a chest before Sophie came along. Udo wondered if they had still ached when the girl laid upon her stomach.
Poppy gum. A local apothecary collected it himself from wild seed pods, dried it, mixed it with belladonna. Ultimately, she spent every last bit she had on the stuff. Mother and daughter both starved under a heap of trash in a back alley.
And now she's tormented?
Oh, no. Agnesa is left well alone. She lives on, in a manner of speaking, in there. She lives out the life she already had, again and again. Her caretaker used to change conditions sometimes. It would put certain opportunities in her path. Chances for betterment, advancement. She never took them for some reason. Always just fell back to what she knew. After a while, the caretaker gave up. It defaulted to observation, noting behavior, recording behavior. Within that vessel, Agnesa has now starved to death some 3,467 times. As he looked on, the young girl's body jerked as if a horse had kicked it. She drifted slowly, collided with the chamber wall. One of the maggots around her arm tightened and pulled her back to center. Sorry, Geffen said. 3,468.
Just let her go,
Udo whispered.
Let her go? Yes, let her die. Why won't they let her die?
Die? Udo, there is much to learn from this one. Udo tore his eyes from the girl. He tried to put them on Geffen, but they kept sliding off the man's face for some reason.
Learn? What the fuck could they possibly learn? You said yourself she just does the same thing over and over again. They know all there is to know of this child. Let her go.
Geffen shook his head. Come over here, Udo. See this tank? The woman it houses was also a whore. She lived in a different city, never met Agnesa, all right. The circumstances of their lives were very similar. Same thing. She liked her poppy gum. She had multiple children, though. You can see she's a bit older, eh? Now, this one's caretaker has run several experiments. 6 times out of 10, she will take the way out to something better when it is presented. Now, why do you think that is? Udo gaped at his guide, but was otherwise silent.
Well, what about this young lady over here? Libeste. Very much like Agnesa. Loves her poppy gum as before. Now, her caretaker has taken great pains to make the ingestion of the narcotic as unpleasant as possible. Sweats, convulsions, nausea, bone ache. You're familiar with what I'm describing, of course. But despite all that, Libeste still loads her pipe. She still smokes her poppy gum.
Geffen's voice trailed away. He gazed up at the woman, Libeste, shaking his head slowly as if she were a beautiful language he could not read. Udo stared at him. He was horrified.
Who the fuck are you?
Geffen blinked slowly before continuing on.
The story is much the same for these others. Here is Undurl, spirits. Boltzer, over there, food. Dompnig, beyond him, also food. Then down that row over there, Grita, drink. Salmi, more poppy gum. Fia, now, Fia is interesting. She took her self-destruction along a different path. She was married to a successful cloth merchant, by the way. She used to cut at the skin of her arms and thighs where the servants could not see. He certainly never saw. He was always off running a flatboat from one city to the next. She had a habit of...
Geffen's voice began to fade as Udo lagged behind. He looked to his left, saw an unending line of blue lights trailing away. On either side of that line, there were more lines. They stood out there, silently. Inside of them, the aborted half-lives of their occupants marched on. They chased after their mistakes, their failures, their demons, as noble hunting dogs chase down hares or foxes. He walked among them in a daze, stricken numb, while some internal part of him insisted on cataloguing those he passed. Old man, young woman, boy, man, man, their faces began to overlay each other in his mind. Smooth or wrinkled, male or female, they all looked the same to him. They all had the same face, the same body. He walked among them. They twitched or were still. They were not there. He stopped before one of the barrels and looked up into the same new face and stared. Frozen, mute. For a moment, not Udo. A voice over his shoulder,
Geffen. I believe you knew this one. His mouth was dry. His eyes slid from the face of this one as it had from the others. He drew them back, but they refused to stay. They drifted like leaves on water. On the side of the barrel, he noticed a five-fingered depression for the first time. Did they all have such a thing? How had he missed it before?
Nix, wasn't it? Geffen asked.
Udo slid his hand into the depression. It fit.